Thank you very much. Who brought the quilt this morning?
I brought the quilt. A girlfriend of mine made it for my 60th birthday.
Oh, no kidding. That's beautiful. Wow. And this is the other quilt right here. As the service was being planned, somebody was bringing this quilt down and putting it up and assuring me they weren't trying some kind of a coup. They just says, no, we're just putting this quilt here. Looks great. Thank you for two very wonderful selections this morning. Thanks so much. Last October, a tragic incident made the news concerning a couple of participants in what was called a spiritual warrior retreat, who passed away during a sweat lodge ceremony in Sedona, Arizona, at a site called the Angel Valley Retreat Center. The retreat was being led by a self-help motivational speaker and self-proclaimed spiritual guide, a gentleman named James Arthur Ray, who'd incorporated himself as James Ray International. Apparently, the conditions in the sweat lodge became such that those who were in it could not breathe properly. They had no avenue of escape. They were forbidden to leave until some of the participants found a way to force their way out. In addition to the two participants who lost their lives with apparent asphyxiation, several others had to be hospitalized. Mr. Ray was not present when all this took place. Others of his associates were in charge of things, or they were supposed to be anyway. And I'm sure, as you can imagine, all kinds of lawsuits are pending all over the place. And once the media gets a hold of an incident like this, it's pretty hard to sort out what all was really going on and determine who's responsible for what. And that's certainly not what I'm up to here. It was just as I followed this story, to the extent that I did, there was this little sidebar item that caught my attention. That seems to be the way I read most headline stories. I'm looking for the subplot there somewhere. I'm looking for whatever the backstory might be. And the one that caught my attention in this was that, according to the reports about this tragedy, the spiritual warrior retreats that Mr. Ray offers are open to 50 participants at a time. They last for 5 days, and each participant pays $10,000 to take part. Wow, that's 10 large for a 5-day retreat to enhance your spiritual life. I'm thinking, wow. I hope you know the last thing I would want to do, make light of the pain caused by the losses that the families and friends of those who died trying to be spiritual warriors are, I'm sure, still experiencing, and I certainly do not do that. It's just that I can't get this thought out of my head. There are people out there ready to pony up 10 grand for a 5-day spiritual hit. Makes me wonder. Makes me wonder if we got anything going on here they might be interested in. Of course, you know, when I start thinking these kinds of thought, a pledge drive is coming up there on the horizon somewhere, but I couldn't, like I say, get that piece of it out of my head. Yeah, you know, there are programs, there are workshops, there are seminars of one kind or another, all aimed at the general theme and offering of spirituality, and they're all over the place on our current cultural landscape. And it's usually when an incident such as the one I just noted occurs that they break the surface and become a little more visible. To put it in admittedly crass terms or crass eel language, spirituality is a hot commodity right now, which means, among other things, there's some kind of a widespread need, some kind of a desire being tapped into. It also means, again, among other things, that the responses to this need will include both the real deals and the charlatans. And the only advice I care to offer along this line is your basic caveat emptor: let the buyer beware. Beware is probably too strong, probably the wrong word there. I would rephrase that to say, let the buyer be careful and discerning. Well, all of this by way of introduction of my topic for this morning, called spiritual but not religious. It was also a phrase we heard yesterday in the conference that Laurie was talking about earlier this morning. It also happens to be the theme of a 3-day lecture series that I'm going to be attending beginning on Tuesday morning at the Pacific School of Religion. That's a seminary that is institutionally related to our own Unitarian Universalist Star King School for the Ministry through Berkeley's Graduate Theological Union. And the featured speaker on this subject is yet another of my theological mentors and guides, Dr. Matthew Fox. Matthew Fox, he should not be confused with the actor by the same name. He's a former Dominican priest. He was actually trained to be a Catholic educator, but was barred from teaching at Catholic-related universities when he came to question the doctrine of original sin. Kind of interesting here, the person doing the barring was at that time a one Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, who is now Pope Benedict XVI. Fox was eventually expelled from the Dominican order altogether. He went on to found his own outfit called the Institute for Creation Spirituality in Oakland, California. He's written several books on the subject, which I have found to be very good and thought-provoking reads. He replaces the idea of original sin with what he calls original blessing. And I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say on this spiritual but not religious topic, as I consider him to be one of those real deals out there on the contemporary spiritual landscape. But rather than go any further with Matthew Fox, though, I'm going to return to yet another one of my mentors, someone I spoke about 2 weeks ago in the sermon I did then. He's Dr. Harvey Cox. His latest book, which I brought back for the second time here, is called The Future of Faith. Those of you who were here on the 10th of January will recall that I used this book as the basis of a sermon which I called The Future of Fundamentalism, but since I figured there were at least two sermons in this thing, I decided to come back for round two. To briefly recap, Harvey Cox, who has recently retired as the Hollis Professor of Divinity at Harvard University, he holds in this book we are moving away from what he calls the age of belief and into the age of the spirit. He writes mostly from the perspective of a liberal Christian while also looking well beyond that faith. And the shift as he sees it, and this is from a very wide-ranging perspective, you know, last Sunday I called it the view from 30,000 feet, he says there's a shift away from the reliance upon a specified code of beliefs to a more open-ended and wide-ranging quest for something called spirituality when it comes to our looking for meaning and depth and some greater purpose in our lives. To loop back real quickly, Matthew Fox's move from a priest to a proponent of creation spirituality is kind of like a personal microcosm example of this larger shift that Harvey Cox is describing from the age of belief to the age of the spirit. Go with his text for just a moment. Spirituality, Dr. Cox writes, can mean a host of things, but there are three reasons why the term is in such widespread use now. First, it is still a form of tacit protest with the pre-shrinking of religion. Second, it represents an attempt to give voice to the awe and wonder before the intricacy of nature that many feel is essential to human life without shifting them into ready-to-wear ecclesiastical patterns. And third, it recognizes the increasingly porous borders between the different religious traditions. He then goes on to offer this rejoinder. The question remains whether emerging new forms of spirituality will also develop sufficient ardor for justice and enough cohesiveness to work for it effectively. Nevertheless, the use of the term spirituality constitutes a sign of the jarring transition through which we are now passing from an expiring age of belief into a new but not yet fully realized age of the spirit. Well, 2 weeks ago, I spoke to some of the ways in which I kind of differed from Harvey Cox on this matter when it comes to the future of fundamentalism. He was saying that as we make this shift, it's going to fade and go away. I'm not quite convinced of that. But I also spoke of my deep appreciation for how his thoughts and his writings have been such a great value to me for over 40 years as they played a role and come to shape my own religious and spiritual journey. But since I'm really in large agreement with what he says in this latest book, I figured I would come back to it and take him at his word for this transition he is signaling and see where we might go with it. I will acknowledge at the outset that I do have a bit of a problem with the very phrase I've used for my sermon title, for it carries an implied presumption of spirituality good, religion bad. Now, on the surface, that does have something of a ring of truth to it. But I think we'll find if we dig a little deeper, it's not that simple. I believe if we can push this a bit, we can find that the two are related in a very positive way. So here's what I'll push off with. I am among those who believe that we human beings are hardwired for spirituality. With some of us, to be sure, a little more hardwired than others. We human beings know two basic things. We're aware of two basic things. One, that we're finite beings. We're born, we die. And two, we live for a time, whatever time that proves to be, in a vast and mysterious universe. I know we don't generally go around with this thought in the forefront of our minds, what with all the other stuff we got to think about and act upon on any given day. I know I don't. I don't generally wake up in the morning thinking, well, here I am, a finite creature in a vast and mysterious universe. It's generally more along the lines of, okay, what do I have to do today, and where's the coffee? You know, and that's about the level that most of us work on. But that greater awareness, let's call it, it's still tucked away in there somewhere. We are finite creatures, plunked down here in a universe with more unknowns than knowns, with more mystery to it than what we've discovered about us. It's a universe that gives us both awe and anxiety. But more so than thinking cosmic thoughts, when we get this kind of awareness, I would say sometimes that affects us. We think about that, you know, when we see the birth of a child, or are affected by the birth of a child. We look there at life on the front end, think, what kind of life will this newborn child have? Where will he or she find some kind of a meaning in it? What will he or she do with their life? What does this life mean in the grand scheme of things? Come to think about it, what about mine? So spirituality, in very broad strokes, is an attempt to come to terms with these kind of ultimate questions in a very personal kind of way. Not so much an intellectual way, but a very personal kind of a way. These questions I just pointed out. Spirituality has to do with how we both reach within ourselves and beyond ourselves as we seek some connection, some relationship with that which we know is greater than ourselves, even if we don't have a name for it, even if we don't have much of a concept of what this mysterious it is. Spirituality is also the quest and drive for some sense of personal peace and some kind of self-acceptance in the face of all that's unknown to us, as well as in the face of some of the hard tests and the personal trials that life inevitably does visit upon us. Spirituality, then, is a search for a blessing. And we go about that search whether or not one believes in a blesser, with a capital B, or not. All right, that's sort of my take on spirituality. Give religion its turn. Religion, in its most commonly understood sense, is really an attempt to codify spirituality, as I've just described. Religion in this codified form, in its belief form, Dr. Cox says is beginning to wane, but religion in its belief form says that if you want a blessing, then here's the capital B blesser you need to believe in. If you want personal peace and assurance in the face of all the mysteries of the universe and in the face of the mysteries of life and death, well then, here's a set of beliefs and practices for you to follow so you can get there. Now, most religions have their origin kind of with a first generation, as it were, having a spiritual experience, which they, quite understandably, want to somehow see preserved and passed on to future generations so they can have that kind of experience too. They want to figure out a way to hold on to this experience they've had so it will be beneficial to other people. The disciples of Jesus, good Jewish folks one and all, had the spiritual experience of their direct encounter with their master, with their spirit guide. And they had their shared spiritual experiences with one another, which, a couple hundred years later, came to be codified into a religion called Christianity. Now, yeah, I will admit that's an oversimplification, but it also describes an age-old process when it comes to the formation of religious traditions, sort of the intense beginning spiritual experience, which then gets tried to pass on. And what you try to pass on never quite captures what the original experience was either. And so if we take this distinction, then the phrase spiritual but not religious makes a certain amount of sense. And Harvey Cox is quite right when he says that one of the reasons the term spirituality has such currency right now is because it is, in his words again, a form of tacit protest with the pre-shrinking of religion and an attempt to give voice to the awe and wonder for the intricacy of nature that many feel is essential to human life without shuffling them into ready-to-wear ecclesiastical patterns. Okay, I got you, Harvey. Now we're going to move on a little bit. We'll try a different take on the term religion. And I hope we can do this with more than just playing a semantic game with it, and also in the hope of getting beyond the more commonly understood meanings of the word. For if we go all the way back to the root meaning of the term religion, it breaks out into two words, re ligare. I don't know, maybe when I went to high school, you still had to take Latin. I don't know if they still do that or not, but I had to learn this stuff like 50 years ago. All right, root meaning of the term religion, re ligare, in Latin it means to bind together, or to bind back. The words religion and the word ligament have the same root. Now, a ligament is what holds your bones in place so they can work the way they're supposed to work. My wife, Michelle, sitting over here this morning, I even asked permission before I went this route. She has a fused right, is it a right wrist or a left wrist? Left wrist? Left wrist. I had right wrist here. That's why, you know, I need to be kept honest here. Left wrist. A fused left wrist because the ligaments broke down, causing the wrist bones to float around, which in turn caused a lot of pain. Bones had to be fused together many years ago. So religion, re ligare, to bind together. If we take this understanding, then I feel that religion and spirituality can complement one another rather than be at odds with each other. For the pursuit of spirituality, the spiritual journey, if it is taken apart from community, or apart from some sense of commitment to a greater good, apart from some, that is to say, binding relationships beyond that person, if it is taken apart from community, apart from some sense of commitment to the common good, beyond the good of self-fulfillment, then the pursuit of spirituality can become very vacuous very quickly. You know, I really have no problem, even get at what I said earlier, I have no problem with persons on their own spiritual quests, taking their own journeys, or going to retreats and workshops and seminars, and paying whatever they can afford to pay for them. It's their money after all, none of my business how they spend it. My only rejoinder is that if the result of such a quest is that you go home with a nice buzz that holds you over to your next hit, then you're just kind of like those wrist bones floating around. Where's the ligament that binds you and calls you to some greater purpose than that of self-fulfillment or self-actualization, wonderful and desirable as those things are? I do not pose this question in a self-righteous way. I like a little self-fulfillment, like a little self-actualization of my own, and set aside times to pursue them. But then I also need a community to which I can return. For the purpose of disengagement, to pursue one's personal journey, the ultimate purpose of disengagement is then re-engagement of whatever you feel is greater and beyond yourself. And a religious community, in the best and now indeed the most accurate sense of the term, is one in which its members do find their own personal spiritual growth and nurture, while also sharing in a sense of connectedness, of being bound to one another, and a sense of commitment to a greater human and even greater global good. I happen to think one of the on-the-ground expressions of that greater human good, greater global good, is found in our own Unitarian Universalist set of purposes and principles. They're not a creed, but rather they are a stated set of goals, which I feel any humane and caring person would consider worth advancing, whether they are a Unitarian Universalist or not. Religion, again in its best sense, and to give one more angle on it, also provides a story, provides a narrative that gives an adherent some sense of connection with the past and a commitment to the future, a future even beyond their individual lives. You know, we tell our family stories for the same reason, to give us some sense of personally where we've come from and how we can pave the way for future generations. This is what religion, in its healthiest sense, also does. Offers a narrative, offers a story about the human condition, about how human beings have searched for God, meaning, purpose in their lives, and offers people a way to connect with and be bound to that story. Well, to get us into the home stretch now, I would say the ongoing challenge before us as a congregation of the Unitarian Universalist Church here is to be a place for the spiritual and the religious in the best sense of both of those terms. And I happen to think we're especially well-suited to do that if we keep rising, and we keep rising to that challenge. I think about taking just a quick snapshot of a week or two of the things that go on around here. On any given day or evening on these premises, sometimes elsewhere, you might find a Buddhist meditation session, drumming circle, yoga group, covenant group. I think we even have a yarn spinning group that has a spiritual angle to it. Gatherings such as these, and numerous others I know I am leaving out or unmentioned, offer ways for individuals to be on their spiritual path or paths. And then I like to think of what happens here at a Sunday service as being a common, greater affirmation of our ties, of our ligaments. This is where we affirm and celebrate the ways in which our lives are connected to and bound with one another. This is where we find the ways to love and care for one another, to know that we are not separated beings. We come also to renew our commitment and our energies to that greater human and global good of which I've spoken, to seek ever more ways to extend our commitment to justice, equity, and compassion in a world that so greatly needs all three. It's where we come to share our stories, our journeys, and our reaching out towards that which is greater than ourselves, with all the various ways we give voice and expression to that. Putting those two things together, this is what I see as meaning to be both spiritual and religious. So just one more thread before closing time. Many of those who come into our midst over the years are both moving away from and moving towards. Moving at times away from a religion they feel no longer serves them, but much more importantly, desiring to move towards something that will deepen and strengthen their lives. And while these folks probably have a better notion of what it is they're moving away from, it is what they and what we wish to move towards that is of far greater importance. So to loop back to Dr. Cox's idea, I would say we here are well suited for a move from an age of belief to an age of the Spirit. Part of our challenge is being an inviting and vibrant congregation where those creative ways of responding to this movement that I've described can happen and can go forth. And that's a challenge I think that is before us if this shift that Cox is describing is taking place, as I do believe it is. So Dr. Cox, good book you've written, as have most of the ones that I've read that you've penned over the past four decades. I even got a couple sermons out of this one. So I'm going to give him almost the last word. This is hardly one more time. As in the past, spirituality can mean a range of different things. For some, it can become mere navel-gazing, a retreat from responsibility in a needy world. Sleek ads in glossy magazines promise a weekend of spiritual renewal in a luxurious spa where, for a price, one can reap the benefits of a sauna, a pedicure, and a guru who will help you cope with the stress of your demanding job. For others, spirituality can mean a disciplined practice of meditation, prayer, or yoga that can lead to a deepened engagement with society. It is evident that different forms of spirituality can lead either to self-indulgence or to deepened social engagement, and so can religion. So whether we are gathered here in community, or whether we're dispersed into the various facets of our lives, Let us remain mindful of our interdependent needs for personal depth, for one another, and for what Dr. Cox calls a deepened engagement with society in a needy world. So with this in this spirit, and with this in mind, may the journeys of our individual lives and our shared life together here continue. And we sing our closing hymn, number 86, Blessed Spirit of My Life.